Welcome to All Sides with Anna Staver. The data is in. Coastal cities like San Francisco and New York are dropping in population, while Columbus is growing. By a lot. Bank of America Institute says we're the fastest growing city in the country in 2023. It's exciting, but are we ready for this kind of growth? Over the next hour, we're unraveling why we're growing and how our city, our region, and even our state is, or maybe isn't, meeting this challenge. Joining me now to start our conversation is Ron Starner. He's the Executive Vice President for Site Selection Magazine and Conway Data, and he's here to talk about what's driving the growth in Central Ohio. Ron, welcome to All Sides.
Good morning, and thanks for having me.
Let's start with the data. What did you use to determine that Ohio is, quote, the crossroads of American commerce?
Well, there are several data points that strongly suggest that Columbus is one of the top performing metropolitan areas in the country and has been so for a long time. This is not a Johnny come lately when it comes to both GDP growth and population growth. In fact, this has been happening for well over a decade. Whether you look at the decade of 2011 to 2021 or the decade of 2012 to 2022, what you find is that the 11-county Columbus region was, in fact, the number one large Midwest metro for population and GDP growth. That's in the entire Midwestern region of the country. It has now become the 14th largest city in the country, and it is up to 16 Fortune 1000 company headquarters. So these are numbers that rival, you know, I mean, you would associate numbers like this normally with a Dallas-Fort Worth or a Houston, and Columbus has put itself squarely in that conversation.
Yeah, and you guys also analyzed by metro area, and you really found three thriving regions. And I thought was interesting was the Indianapolis Carmel Anderson area in Indiana, the Columbus area in Ohio, and the Dallas-Fort Worth-Arlington, Texas area. So these are sort of the hubs in the country, correct?
Absolutely. And a couple of years ago, I dug a little bit deeper into these numbers and found that there are specific reasons why communities like these outperform the rest of the country. And it's really not just our data that's showing this. You could go to polycom.com, put out by Dr. William Fruth of Palm City, Florida. He has consistently ranked Columbus, Ohio as one of the top performing metropolitan regions in the country. And if you could just bear with me, I actually identified seven characteristics that these top performers have in common. So when I dug in further to behind the data, what I found was that whether you're talking about a Columbus, an Indy, or a DFW, they have these seven qualities in common. Number one, they have deliberate and innovative talent attraction strategies. Two, they have sustained quality of place initiatives. Three, they have continued strong demand for degreed, highly skilled professionals and technical workers. Four is affordability. Five, absence of woes plaguing established tech hubs. Six, Research One universities that act as talent factories. And then number seven, a multitude of living options. In each and every instance where we were finding communities scoring at this top level, we found those seven factors.
Oh, that's really interesting. Especially because, you know, if you live here in Central Ohio, a lot of we talk about the rising unaffordability, but compared to the Denvers, the San Franciscos, the New York Cities, probably even the Austins, we are much more affordable still.
Well, you have a lot of options, right? Because you have 11 counties. And as you go farther out into those outlying counties,
yeah,
suddenly real estate gets a lot more affordable. And when you're talking about Greater Columbus, you're seeing jobs move to those outer counties, particularly Licking County and Delaware County. In fact, Licking County ranks number one among all large counties in the United States in job growth from 2018 to 2022, according to Lightcast data.
Yeah, that's the Intel project. I mean, that's just such a massive development that's coming to Central Ohio.
Yeah, and then Delaware County is doing quite well. Lightcast measured all 616 large counties in the country. It ranks 110th out of those. So that's very good for Delaware County. And
fastest growing county in Ohio.
Yeah. So, you know, the point here is that there's a multitude of options, whether for living or working, you know, for you don't necessarily have to live in downtown Columbus to thrive and prosper.
Yeah, you looked at a lot of the corporate investments, like the Intels, the Hondas, the different expansions that we're getting. But what I also thought was interesting is you guys evaluated our infrastructure, what we're investing in public transportation, in highways, roads, bridges. And, you know, when I thought about it, Ohio is getting a lot of that, particularly even from the federal infrastructure bill. Now, it's down in Cincinnati, but the Brent Spence Bridge is a huge project.
Absolutely. You know, 2% of national GDP crosses that bridge every day. So that just shows you how important it is, hence the federal investment. But interestingly, I actually just talked to your governor yesterday, and it's clear that he's made infrastructure investment a top priority of his administration as well.
Yeah, we're talking a lot about expanding 71, which runs through Columbus, about getting a more dedicated highway between Columbus and Toledo. There is a lot of conversation. And anybody who lives in Central Ohio knows there's been an increasing amount of traffic over the last decade. So it's definitely welcome to be thinking about this. The other thing you guys looked at that I thought was really interesting was investments into airports. Why is that an important thing to consider?
Couple of reasons. Number one is a key headquarters location criterion is direct flights, and that's both to key domestic markets and key international markets. So the more direct flights an airport has to places like New York, San Francisco, and London, the better it's going to do in its overall business attractiveness. But where Ohio is really making hay these days is in cargo business. So when you look at the cargo volume coming out of Rickenbacker, and you know, I would also include the Northern Kentucky airport as an Ohio asset. I mean, technically it's in Boone County, Kentucky, but we all call it the Cincinnati Airport. That has two major international shipping hubs by air, one for Amazon and one for DHL. So it cannot be understated what the total impact that is on the GDP of Ohio.
Yeah, we actually talked about that airport yesterday, weirdly, because it is where Columbus Zoo ships manatees back to Florida to release into the wild. So all kinds of stuff gets shipped out of that airport.
Yeah, it's fascinating. And that, by the way, that Amazon hub is going to double in size over the next decade. So I think Amazon has only scratched the surface in terms of what it's planning to do with its Prime Air hub there.
We also want to hear from you, our listeners, this hour. Do you have anecdotes or data points of growth here in Columbus and how the region is changing for the good or maybe for the worse? If you want to join our conversation about the growth in Central Ohio, give us a call at 614-292-8513. Or you can email allsides at WOSU.org. So Columbus is the fastest growing city in the Midwest. How does its growth rank in comparison with other regions of the country?
Well, I'm glad you asked that question because one of my favorite sources of data is, I mentioned Policom. It's P-O-L-I-C-O-M. I would encourage all listeners to bookmark this website. For my money, it's the best website in terms of being chock full of data on economic development success by community. For the past 30 plus years, Dr. Fruth has ranked every one of the 384 MSAs in the country on long-term economic performance.
That's quite a body of work. Oh my
I know.
Goodness.
Currently, Columbus ranks number 20 in the country. And that's very good, right? Because you have, you know, your usual suspects at the top, Salt Lake City, number one, Austin, number two, and Nashville, number three. But Columbus is 20th out of 384. That's really strong. But to me, even more important than that is the fact that it has been increasing its ranking over the years. If you go back to 2021, Columbus ranked number 35 in the country. Next year it was 27, the next year it was 24, and now it is number 20. That's what you want to see. Like if I were Kenny McDonald at One Columbus, that's the number that I would hang my hat on, that rise in the metric.
And we're actually going to be hearing from Kenny McDonald a little later this hour. But, for all the growth, this kind of expansion does bring certain challenges to an area that they have to meet if they're going to succeed. What are, you talked about some of the secret sauce for development. What are some of the things cities do to sustain this?
Well, the biggest one is it revolves around workforce. And there are you have to unpack workforce into multiple topics. And what we're seeing nationwide right now are two of the biggest barriers to workforce entry are childcare and affordable housing. And you mentioned these are byproducts of growth, right? The more popular your area becomes, whether it's through net in migration or births or international migration, whatever it is, it's going to make your area more expensive. And that means it's going to make your area more expensive for the two things that the average worker needs the most: an affordable place to live and a quality, affordable child care. And these become significant barriers to entry the more overheated growth becomes in an MSA.
Yeah, actually, to circle back, you said you were speaking to the governor the other day. He recently, at his State of the State, made a surprising focus on affordable child care and about raising our threshold for state subsidized child care. Because here in Central Ohio, I mean, it can get, $12,000 for one kid. You could be looking at $24,000 or $25,000 for two kids. It's a big chunk of change for young families.
Absolutely. It becomes a huge barrier to workforce entry. And you have to not only consider the cost of childcare, but the cost of transportation as well. A family with two kids that are young, that family could be looking at paying upwards of $20,000 a year on childcare and around $20,000 a year in transportation costs. Well, suddenly you're up to 40K in expenses, and that's before you have to pay all the other bills. So, we're seeing some innovative solutions happening around the country. Unfortunately, they're just not happening fast enough.
I want to talk a little bit about the education component because I think it's really interesting and particularly important here in Ohio because we have brought in this Intel project and it's caused changes at Columbus State, at Ohio State. Our public colleges and universities are trying to grow the workforce that Intel wants. But one of the challenges is having the workforce today, and there's a lot of conversation around bringing in foreign workers on those HB1 visas. And sometimes that's a little bit controversial.
Well, yeah, look, it's absolutely necessary. I mean, to supply the workers in the numbers that Intel is talking about, I really don't see how the state of Ohio has any choice but to take an all of the above approach to workforce development, and that includes bringing in international talent, assuming that they're able to pass muster and get the visas that they need to come. But yeah, I mean, it's doubtful that Ohio is going to be able to meet the numbers it needs without going that route.
I want to talk a little bit about the cities that aren't growing. So I referenced New York and San Francisco, Los Angeles here in the opening. They've seen pretty big declines in their populations in the last couple of years. What, I mean, outside of affordability, or maybe that is the whole reason, but what's going on here?
Well, I can address the employer angle because that's who we primarily talk to, right? We talk to companies and why they choose to move. And I've actually interviewed a lot of California executives over the last 3 years who have made the decision to relocate their company to another state. Now, just to be clear, that most of them are not going to Ohio. The biggest numbers are going to cities in Texas and Florida and Arizona, and other nearby states like Nevada, Utah, and Idaho. But the reasons they tell me why they're leaving California are, number one, they feel like the tax and regulatory burden has become too onerous on them as a business. And just to be able to remain competitive in their industry sector, they've told me they've had no choice but to seek a location elsewhere.
That makes sense. And a lot of those states that you referenced, Utah, Idaho, Arizona, Nevada, they have great mountains, outdoor recreation. So they sort of tick that like outdoor activity box and an affordability box.
Right. And obviously, the company's not having to relocate clear across the country, so those are about as close as they can get if they're leaving California.
Final question. What are the folks here in Central Ohio to make of all this? I mean, sometimes it's hard to wrap your head around just how much the city of Columbus has changed, say, in the last 20 years.
Yeah, look. It's all good news. I mean, it's good news until, right, the growth become, exacerbates problems to the point that people say, well, I guess it's time for me to find another place to live. The good news about Ohio is you have some wonderful small towns. To me, the untold story about Ohio is the success of its vibrant small towns. If you look at the state of Ohio, it has 20 small towns that rank in the top 100 performing small towns in the country, according to Site Selection Magazine, led by perennial number one winner, Findlay. Now, I realize Findlay is about what, an hour and a half from Columbus? Is that about right?
Sounds about right.
Yeah. So you may not want to move as far away as Findlay, but the point is, there are so many great, thriving small towns all over Ohio that if you ever find the growth getting a bit too much for you, look at a town like Findlay. They'd love to have you, and the jobs there are every bit as good as the jobs in Columbus.
That was Ron Starner, the Executive Vice President of Site Selection Magazine and Conway Data Incorporated. Thank you so much for your time today.
My pleasure.
Coming up, now that we understand the why, we're going to dive into the what all this growth means for Columbus. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Anna Saver. Columbus is growing faster than any metropolitan region in the Midwest. And we're looking at what this means. Joining us now to address it is from an economic standpoint, is Kenny McDonald, president and CEO of Columbus Partnership. Welcome to All Sides, Kenny.
Thanks for having us, Anne.
Columbus has been experiencing record economic growth for the past 2 years, including that major private sector investment, Intel. Would you say that we're experiencing a new era of economic growth?
We're definitely in transition to some sectors that we've not been big players before. Semiconductors would be the obvious one. With the announcement of Intel's fab, we sort of brought the whole industry to the Midwest. And you've seen operations open in New York and Indiana and stuff around us because I think we've served as a proof point, and we want to be the center of that. Life sciences would be the other industry that was kind of a small industry that we're trying to make a name and have some breakthroughs with our presence of Nationwide Children's, OSU Medical Center, and over the last 5 or 6 years, those breakthroughs have come through. We built some really big companies here, had some big exits. And then we have a real base of operations with them and Amgen and others coming in. Those are industries that Central Ohio did not have 10 years ago.
Yeah, and it's really interesting because it's not just Intel coming, it's not just these companies, it's all the construction jobs that get created. It's all of the secondary and third tier, right? The new restaurants and businesses, the new supports for it, right? It's not just one company with one set of jobs.
Well, we like to say that obviously there's a reason that we bring a focus to bringing these base jobs, maybe these call them anchor tenants in some of these industries. They are, in some ways, the biggest small business stimulant that we've ever had. If you think about all of the restaurants and schools and churches and small business centers that you have to build to serve the workers that are going to have the discretionary income. And the jobs this is creating to put to work. We get ex as excited about seeing some of these downstream effects as we do, the ribbon cutting of the major facility.
I gotta wonder. So, in the last couple of years, interest rates have more than doubled, and it's been hard for homeowners, and just, people getting car loans, all kinds of. How has it impacted business growth here in the region?
I think that it impacts several things. One is that it can slow growth overall. Regions and cities that are gaining in population have an opportunity to get better because you're bringing in revenue. If you're not bringing in that population, believe me, things are harder. Now, we're thankful in Central Ohio that we continue to have people that migrate to our market from all over the country and all over the world every 4 or 5 years. Maybe 90 to 100,000 people are moving here, and we're gaining in population. We have to have a housing stock. Something that's been a calling card for decades, quite frankly, is that you could live in an urban lifestyle, a suburban lifestyle, even in a rural lifestyle, all within maybe 30 to 40 minutes of each other from the center of the city. That's really being challenged now by this perfect storm of rates going up, us not building enough stock across the entire market. We're building about half of what we need to in terms of housing units since the Great Recession back in 08 and 09. And then a multitude of layers of regulatory environment to make it a little bit harder to do that now.
Yeah, we actually did a six-part deep dive called Untangled. It's a separate series that we're running here just on affordability and the housing crisis. How are you guys at Columbus Partnership trying to help incentivize? Because we had Columbus City Council President Pro Tem Rob Dorans on Untangled, and he said we need 200,000 homes in the coming decade. It's just an astronomical number of construction to meet the demand.
When we were doing our strategy, and this seems like forever ago, but prior to the pandemic and the end of the last decade in 2019, we started to see the housing gap because we had literally been building maybe a half of the housing units, apartments, and single family homes since 08 and 09. And it was beginning to catch up with to us because we were growing at that time, call them pre-pandemic and pre-Intel. We were growing at a pretty good pace as well, fastest in the Midwest. We weren't necessarily keeping up. And we started to bring this issue up in the boardrooms and in the community halls, at the township meetings, and with our economic development partners across the 11 counties. Until the pandemic and Intel's announcement, did everybody really start to pay attention to those numbers? And then the rates have actually just made it harder for people to move around. So if you have a rate less than 3%, you're probably not giving that house
Oh
up.
no, super not.
And it's a little bit of a perfect storm, some of which we can control, some of which we can't, and the market will have to take advantage of it. Probably the number one thing we're doing is making sure we're understanding, we're talking to leaders across our region about housing and its impact on economic development. And in fact, that housing is economic development in some ways.
We actually have an email from Midge Call, who talked about how she lives on the east side of town, and she's frequently up and down Fifth Avenue, and she sees lots of places needing rehabbed or repurposed. And this is something that's such an interesting conversation post-pandemic about taking office space or landmark buildings, and converting them into housing. And I know there's a lot of challenges that come with that, but can you speak a little bit about like sort of changing the dynamics of a downtown core?
I think that we're going through a fascinating period where both the central business districts in every major city, with the redevelopment of some of those offices into housing is probably number one priority. And then when you extend out across the neighborhoods of any city, the amount of work that's being done to redevelop and density gets brought up as a bad word all the time. But typically, if we look back through our history, our cities were very dense because people were clustered together to take advantage of not extending that infrastructure as far. It was just a rational decision, and people were closer together because they didn't have vehicles and things like that. For different reasons, that same density is really a powerful driver. Again, people want to be close to each other. Infrastructure costs a lot, so if we can make that pipe a little shorter, we could probably do more with it. And the fact that maybe an average car payment is over $700 now,
I
another
know, that's
aspect.
so crazy.
We have to acknowledge that we have to have parts of our city where people don't need a car, or maybe they're in a beginning of their career and things like that. Wouldn't it be nice to actually spend a little bit more on housing if you don't have to have a vehicle, if you have mass transit, things like that?
And if you want to give us a question, you can call 614-292-8513 or email allsides@wosu.org. Feel free to ask a question about growth in Central Ohio or share your own anecdote, like Midge did, about what you see in your own neighborhood and how it's changed, and whether you think that's a good thing or a bad thing. So, Columbus's region has low unemployment, which is a good thing. I mean, ideally we want low unemployment, but there seems to be everywhere I go, there are job signs at like almost every store I walk into. It strikes me that possibly we have a bit of a labor shortage here.
Well, I'll use the word perfect storm, words perfect storm again. If I think about things nationally first and then try to give local examples, obviously the demographics of the country are changing. There'll be more people that are retiring this year than are being born. And there's things like that that we're paying close attention to. Very, very lucky, I think, in our region that we're continuing to add a diverse population coming to the market. Like I said, if you looked at any 5-year period, you have between maybe 90 and 100,000 people, about half of which end up in Franklin County in the base county, and then about half that spread around our region. We think that's an incredible advantage, and we have to be building the kind of communities that they want to live in. That's going to require doing things a little differently. It's going to require more listening to those folks. And then it's going to require public-private partnerships to make sure that we're piecing together the infrastructure and the housing structure to make that work.
So, what lessons should the Columbus region be taking from places like San Francisco, Los Angeles, Denver, even, which have just seen Denver's probably the best example, right? In the last couple of decades, it's seen an explosion in growth and an explosion in housing unaffordability.
Studying history is always a good idea. While we're living through very interesting times, aspects of it have been repeated, even in our own history. If I go back to 2001, 2002, we were building twice as much housing in terms of units than we're building right now. And we have several hundred thousand more people here. And so I know that we can do it because we're building solutions there. Maybe going back to a question you just asked me, I don't think the intent is just take down more farm fields and put more subdivisions up, by the way. We want to build more transit-oriented communities, and also connect those communities so that if you do build a subdivision, it's attached to the shopping area next to it. There's all this talk nationally about 15-minute cities and things like that. People like to be able to walk things in their neighborhood, and that is in the suburbs and in our exurbs just as much as it is in the center city.
Yeah, there's a development up by where I live. I think it's called Darby Farm. I'm not 100, but they are building a bunch of housing, and then there's like single family homes, there's townhomes, there are apartments, and then there's a bunch of shops built into it. And so it's like a whole mini city that's being built on what I suspect, based on the farm in the development name, used to be a farm field. But it is interesting to watch that mixed-use, very intentional community go up.
Also, having mixed-income communities, I think, is a there's some social advantages to that as well, where you're living with people that are working in all kinds of occupations. I think it helps us understand each other. If you go back to the history of cities and communities, that's historically been true. And only in modern times have we begin to kind of compartmentalize everybody. And we think that doing that more and more has benefits socially and politically as well, that helps us become actually a more competitive place.
My husband just texted me, it's Evans Farms, so I want to correct that. you know, I sort of, so the Columbus region's economy is doing more than growing. I think that's one of the takeaways that I have from this conversation. And, you know, it's transforming in a lot of ways. And we talked a little bit about the new industries that are being built here in Ohio. Do you have any sense of why? Like, I have lots of reasons. I love Ohio, but why is all this investment? Why is all this growth happening? Why are people choosing our state?
It's been an intentional strategy. I had the good fortune to live here almost 14 years now. When I moved to Ohio and the Columbus market, it was a very different economy. First of all, it's far more diverse than it was then, both in population and in industry. Ohio, through the creation of Jobs Ohio, through some fiscal discipline, I think, of putting the state in a good situation where they can invest in infrastructure for the last couple of administration. But I will point to the creation of Jobs Ohio as a really critical moment. And then in our region, in our case, we created an organization called Columbus 2020 that we ran for 10 years between 2010 and 2020 that was solely focused on, could we become a fast-growing market?
Oh, interesting.
Because we were not. We weren't on that list.
Would you consider Columbus 2020 a success?
I would, in terms of the question that we were trying to answer, is could we become a notable growth region? And in fact, we became the fastest growing region in the Midwest. And in many ways, we joined the ranks of Nashville and Austin and Raleigh. When we double-clicked on that at the end of that decade, though, we wanted to do more than that. And we wanted to do, you know, we actually wanted to set a bolder goal, which was obviously you need to continue to grow. Whether you're a person, an organization, or a city, you have to continue to grow to get better and to replenish your resources. But we also wanted to connect more people to that. And I think that if we work on closing the gaps in wealth creation and opportunity attainment, that's equally important, and we want to work with equal intensity with our partners at a community level to make sure that that happens as well. And I think you're starting to see some progress there. We have a long way to go, though, in terms of inclusion of everybody in our rural communities, our urban communities, being able to take advantage of the opportunities that are being created.
So then what is the Columbus 2030 goal?
Well, I think that I'll answer it this way. I think a lot about the year 2029 and where we want to be, maybe midway through 2029. And when we're thinking about what is 2030 to 2040 going to hold? And we're doing so many transformative things all at once. Building a world-class airport terminal, first in 70 years. Changing our zoning laws across Franklin County and the city of Columbus, first time in 70 years. Building the mass transit, rapid mass transit system, something we've never had.
Maybe even Amtrak.
Exactly. We're building a couple of the largest manufacturing plants in the world with Intel, and then the LG Honda partnership just 40 minutes from us. An innovation district at Ohio State, which has never been done before. And that's all going to happen in 4 or 5 years. And I hope that midway through 2029, the conversation and the opportunities that we're thinking about for 2030 to 2040 are things I can't even imagine right now. And so it isn't, we want to keep our chin up over the horizon with all the changes, but we also want to keep our head down and grind and get this important work done. It's going to take a lot of education, awareness, and hard work to get done over the next 4 or 5 years.
That was Kenny McDonald, the president and CEO of the Columbus Partnership. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you.
Coming up, from housing to public transit, we're exploring whether Central Ohio is ready to meet this kind of growth. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Anna Staver. In 2023, Columbus was the highest growing population of any big city in America. But we've also had some pretty big increases in the cost of housing. And don't get me started on the traffic. Columbus City Council President Pro Tem Rob Dorans was recently on our show saying the city needs to add about 200,000 housing units over the coming decade to keep up with rising demands. Joining us to talk about how Columbus is meeting all these challenges is Michael Wilkoth, Senior Vice President of Community Impact at the United Way of Central Ohio. Michael, welcome to All Sides.
Thank you. Good morning.
I want to start with Link Us, because we'll be dedicating a show to the proposal when we get closer to Election Day. But can you, in broad brushstrokes, give us an overview of what this proposal is?
Absolutely. We have the opportunity as a community to invest in what I refer to as transportation restorative justice, and that is called Link Us. The simplest way I could describe it, it's about linking us with our feet, linking us on bicycles, and linking us with a bus rapid transit. In all, it will be an $8 billion transportation plan that the voters of Franklin County will get to invest in. It will be implemented over a 25-year period. We will be seeking a 1% sales tax to replace the current 0.5% sales tax. That is the primarily that's how we fund public transit in the state of Ohio. But it's really about adding 500 miles of sidewalks and bike lanes and bike trails. That's what we refer to as transportation supportive infrastructure. And then it's about a 50% increase in the amount of buses that would be out on the street. And it would be the implementation of 3 bus rapid transit corridors. One would be on Main Street from downtown out to Reynoldsburg. A second would be on West Broad from downtown out to the casino. And a third line would be up Olentangy River Road to Bethel and then up to Sawmill over to Bridge Park. Real quick, what is bus rapid transit? These would be a double bus that's connected by what I'll call like an accordion.
Oh, the accordion, yeah.
And what we will have are permanent stations in the road, which means when that double articulated bus is what it's called, when that pulls up into the station, all 4 doors on the bus would open at once, which means everybody can exit all 4 doors and enter all 4 doors because the financial transactions already occurred at the station, which means the speed of loading and unloading is now very, very fast. And bus rapid transit also has advanced signalization, which means those articulated buses won't stop at red lights. So now you have not just the capacity, but now you also have the efficiency, and then developers can build higher density development of jobs and housing, education, healthcare near those stops. It's kind of like having light rail for a fraction of the cost that runs down the middle of the street.
That's really neat, actually. You've done a good job of explaining it. And what's really fascinating to me is that Columbus's new zoning proposals, you referenced that first time in 70 years. Mm-hmm. And, or actually maybe the
Kenny.
Previous. Yes, Kenny
mm-hmm.
referenced it. So the first time in 70 years, we're looking at the zoning here in Columbus. And the new proposals are around these corridors.
They are. And in fact, of course, we're on radio, not TV, but I did bring my Zone In water bottle today. I am a huge supporter of Zone In, where the city is really looking at these traditional corridors. I know that, you know, Kenny did a great job of talking about the history of cities, of being dense and walkable and giving people. I mean, we used to have communities where people would work, worship, go to school, and have social connections within a relatively small geography. We just don't live that way anymore. But we adopted a zoning code right after World War II, as most American cities did, that was really about the separation of uses, because really American cities were kind of messy and dirty and complicated places. And there was a value of, let's put a shopping center over here and let's put houses over there. So American cities just started to follow this pattern of separating uses and separating those uses really around the car. And Zone In is going to look at those corridors, which right now, those corridors, if were built out as the zoning code currently allows, they would support 6,000 housing units. After Zone In, those corridors can support 88,000 housing units, which will be a significant way of us chipping away at that housing supply gap and also putting that housing along these transit corridors.
You know, I get the sense that unlike some other cities, like New York City, for example, that really grew up before the automobile, it feels like Columbus is a city that grew alongside the car.
Yes and no. So let's wind that clock back just a little bit. Believe it or not, Interstate 270, that was an idea that was laid out in a report in 1953. It's called the Bergdorf Study. Construction started 9 years later, 1962, and Interstate 270 opened in 1975. And the Columbus Dispatch wrote a piece on 270 when it opened, and they called it the Highway to Nowhere. Like, you know, think about it. 1975, Dublin had maybe 3,500 people living in it. So what is important about this example is nobody voted on it. It irrevocably reshaped the urban geography of our region. That idea of building this beltway and adding more highways was also happening when, you know, we were doing busing for desegregation. There was still a lot of structural racism in the housing market. So what did 270 do? It really pulled a lot of life and economic vitality out of the city. I think most people will be shocked to hear this statistic. If you look at the city of Columbus boundaries that we had in 1960, there are 150,000 less people living within the 1950 boundaries of the city of Columbus in the 1960 census. Why? Because we were investing in these things that started to pull transportation and vitality out of the city. So here we are, 2024, the last time we had a major transportation new infrastructure idea was 71 years ago. The voters didn't choose it. It had a lot of unintended negative consequences. Now we have the opportunity to fix that.
That's such an interesting, I had never considered that 270 was tied to sort of the flight from the cities.
I mean, there are lots of things going on. I mean, I don't, you know, I want to be optimistic and think that there was not an intentionality when beltways were being designed, that it had the intention of pulling vitality out of urban cities. But you want to think about the other thing. Think about Interstate 71, or think about Interstate 70 on the Near East Side. You know, some highways that go through urban neighborhoods, they might be elevated, some might be at grade. Ours are kind of below grade. That's actually better environmentally on the neighborhood. But think about when you drive on 71 or 70, how wide that highway and the embankment is. And think about a construction timetable that took a decade, and how if you lived on Main Street, you really couldn't get over to Livingston for a decade. And then if you had a small business on Livingston Avenue or Main Street, not only did you lose a lot of customers because of the housing demolition, but then you lost that connection. And now let's go to what's happening right now. I'm sure many of your listeners saw in the paper in the last week that the reconstruction of Interstate 70-71 between the old Cooper Stadium and Nationwide Children's Hospital is now going to be extended many, many years longer. I mean, this is a multi-billion dollar project that's just replacing a 2-mile-long section of highway that already exists. So this is the kind of investment cycle that we're trapped in by only investing in cars. And what's happened is the federal government for decades has overinvested in cars and highways and not on transit.
I also want to talk about housing more generally, and not just because we did a 6-part series on the housing crisis. But one of the biggest challenges that face cities as they experience these explosive periods of growth is increasing unaffordability. That essentially, a lot of our essential workers, our lower wage workers, are no longer able to afford the city that they work in.
It is a huge concern. So let's put in perspective through my lens of working at United Way. We support programs where are focused on clients that earn at 200% of federal poverty. That would be a single individual who lives on $26,000 a year, or a family of three that lives on $44,000. The nonprofit sector in many ways is the connective tissue that is helping what I would refer to as the working poor. These are people who earn too much money often for a lot of government supports, but they struggle to put food on the table. They struggle with housing
costs. The benefits
cliff. I mean, you and Kenny talked about it. The average price of a new car last year was $750 a month, but the average price of a used car purchased in 2023 was $550. So our sector, the nonprofit sector, we have 76 organizations that are all focused on building pathways to success for third graders. And I want to point out the significance of that. You learn to read up until third grade. The curriculum shifts at fourth grade where you have to read to learn. If you don't make that transition, you're never going to be able to take advantage of the economic opportunities of Central Ohio, right? You're not going to work at Intel or Honda or Hyperion or some of these other companies if you can't finish your K through senior year trajectory. So back to the housing. The housing costs are skyrocketing. If you use the lens where I spend most of my time, I want to point out a couple examples. It used to be in Franklin County, if you lost your housing through an eviction or some other life episode, you would be in our shelter system 19, 21, 23 days. Then it inched up to 35. Then it went to 50. In 2022, it was at 80 days. So far in 2024, if you lose your housing, you're now going to be in a shelter for 109 days. So think about a mom with two kids is now going to be living in a shelter for over 3 months. What used to cost our community $3,500 when someone lost their housing, that's now running $12,000 because the number of days you're in the shelter system have now ballooned. Why? There's no housing. And if there is housing, the only landlords willing to take people with eviction, that geography has really shrunk to Northland, Linden, and the Hilltop. But now those rents that used to be maybe $600 are now $950. And that landlord wants first month, last month, another month for security deposit. It's a very expensive proposition to get people back into housing. And last year, we had the record number of evictions ever in Franklin County. And so far in 2024, evictions are running 11% higher than last year's record, which was 23,000 eviction filings. So the housing affordability, and this is the thing I want to point out to your listeners. A lot of times we talk about affordable housing, but there's really housing affordability, which is impacting all of us.
Yeah, we have a call that we unfortunately can't take because we're almost at the end of the hour. But Carrie from Clintonville was concerned about homelessness and working families and how they fit into the housing plan. And I did want to reference that last week, the Columbus Dispatch published an article about Sand Ridge Apartments. I don't know if you saw this.
I did.
It used to be a family-owned apartment complex on Columbus's northeast side, but it has new owners and they're giving everyone 60 days to move out.
What's crazy about that article? 36 years ago, I leased apartments in the apartment complex immediately next door, which were the same type of buildings. So I'm intimately familiar with those buildings. That story is indicative of what's happening all across the city. As Kenny said, we're underbuilding housing by half. We've been underbuilding for over a decade. That scarcity is causing an increase in homelessness. It's causing an increase in evictions. Where are those evictions happening? It's Northland, far east side, out to Reynoldsburg. It's the far west side. And if you look up every elementary school, regardless of the school district it's located in, the largest number of elementary schools that have the most kids academically off track line up like lines on a spreadsheet with the eviction data. If family can't be stable in housing, the kid is not going to be stable in the classroom.
Well, that's a depressing note. Is there a positive thought that you have for the last 30 seconds that we could end on?
Regional housing strategy, zone in, link us. As Kenny said, there are huge things happening. We have control over the destiny of our future. And if we implement zone in and link us in the housing strategy, we will have a more equitable future for all.
That was Michael Wilkos, a senior vice president of community impact at the United Way of Central Ohio. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And that'll do it for this hour of All Sides with Anna Staver. Thanks for listening on 89.7 NPR News.